Hello, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, your host this week. Today, we're going to delve into the implications of the rain that most of us got. Two analysts from Markets Farm will join us in the second half of the show to ponder the impact of the rain across parched Western Canada and into the East.
We're looking at a shortage of canola. You know, last year, I think we were about 18.7 million tons came off the prairie fields. Everybody was hoping for a little bit over 20 million tons. Now, you talk to traders and analysts, they're saying, well, maybe it's going to be 15, might be up to 17. Some guys are saying it could be as low as 12.
In a minute, we'll look at some of the challenges Northwest Ontario farmers are having with their part of the drought, as well as, get this, a problem created by too much rain in a different part of Ontario.
If you're the tar spot fungus, it's been great, right? Because the weather, you know, we're hot and sticky right now, right? So this is ideal weather. So humidity and leaf wetness is better than rainfall in many cases because the leaf itself stays wet. You know, the more humidity, the more leaf wetness surrounds the tar spot or the spores, the more likelihood they will be happy.
But first, I wanted to point out something to you all. We have a YouTube channel, just like the K-pop and country stars your kids and grandkids are always telling you about. It's got a little different focus, though. You can find it on the YouTube site by searching Between the Rows Podcast. Make sure to include the podcast bit. That's Between the Rows Podcast. You'll find the latest episodes on there, plus our archive, plus links and other resources to our stories. We hope it's a place where you'll be able to let us know about stories in your community, and just to let us know what you're seeing out there. Check it out at Between the Rows Podcast.
Part of being a farmer is being an accountant and a mechanic and a chemist. You have lots on the go. So FarmLink makes your grain marketing go further. We help you reach your financial goals with calculated sales decisions. No bias, just solutions and results. Plus, with our new app, GrainFox, we bring every opportunity right to your fingertips. Literally. Start seeing the returns that'll get your family ahead. You've earned it. FarmLink. Your work is worth more. Get started at farmlinksolutions.ca.
Now, farmers from Manitoba West have gotten most of the media attention in this terrible drought. But it stretches into Ontario as well, and FarmTario's Diana Martin has taken a look at an aspect of this drought as Ontario farmers grapple with it today. In this piece, Diana looks at how Ontario farmers who have hay are helping those who don't. It's with a program called the Northwestern Livestock Emergency Assistance Initiative. Here she speaks with Rob Lipsett, President of Beef Farmers of Ontario.
So can you tell me a little bit about that program and if it's been able to get some hay and feed, like hay, feed, forage, whatever might be on the trucks, has it been able to actually get any deliveries out to the producers in need?
Certainly. This is one of those stories that started out bad, but we actually got a positive response. I brought this to the attention of the provincial government in late May that we were starting to see drought conditions creep in. So as it went on, we got to the end of June and it was a really serious problem. So the first thing I spoke to Minister Lisa Thompson about when she assumed her new role was the drought situation. Being a farmer herself, she fully understood it. And she was very quick to work with us, and the provincial government found some money that we could start a program to get some hay up to the Kenora Rainy River District strictly to get them through the pasture season. And the idea behind this was an application had gone into the federal government for the National Agri Recovery Program. But as they investigated what they would need to do for that program, the provincial government felt that they needed to step up and do something in the short term. So the program was developed over a weekend. The government decided a best way to do it would be through a transfer payment agreement, and that BFO would look after acquiring hay and getting it up to the northwestern portion of the province. And this all came together in a matter of 7 days. We designed a program, made application forms. The applications are available for any producers on the BFO website or through the OMAFRA website. And it's a simple process. We're kind of going on your own word. Fill out an application, number of head, but you must have a premise ID and a farm business registration number to participate in this program.
Now, for Northern Ontario, you know, it's very fortunate that you guys are able to work with the province and really expedite this hay and the feed, but it is sort of a short-term solution for what looks to be a long-term challenge. I was just reading about the 2002 drought of Western, predominantly Western Canada, and not only did they have their forage fields burn up pretty much, and a lot of their grain crops as well, which created issues of accessible feed throughout the winter. And obviously, with Western Canada stretching actually all the way to British Columbia, with them also suffering a drought, is there a concern, not just for the people who are dealing with this drought, but for all livestock producers, that the cost of feed is going to have an impact going forward?
Yeah, that is a legitimate concern. And I think that we looked at a lot of different ways to approach it. But definitely now that we've moved in and have a short-term program underway, all of our focus is now on the long-term and even beyond getting through this winter. But you've raised a lot of good points. Predictions for commodity prices are high. This is only going to drive them higher due to supply and demand economics. And I think that's why it's imperative that the governments step up and do what they can to provide probably a financial assistance to access some of that more expensive feed. We are understanding that there is feed and pasture available in Quebec and the Maritimes. We're investigating different models of moving that feed or moving the cows one way or the other. So we're looking at a lot of different things. We've even got a group of directors on our board looking at long 2 to 3 year solutions. There's a lot of concern that the hay, pasture, the forage crops just aren't going to come back next year. And so we recognize that there's going to be work to do to reestablish those stands of feed. And we believe that that shouldn't be burdened by the producer alone either. So I think we're pushing that there's a lot of different solutions, and there isn't just a one-size-fits-all solution to this, that we almost need a suite of programs available for producers that they could pick and choose and kind of custom make a relief program for themselves. And we're at a real loss. Feed is in short supply. We're doing the best we can to gather up what there is, but short supply means high prices, and the cattle markets have been very volatile for the past 4 or 5 years, and high input costs don't translate well for what we're facing right now.
Is there work being done into more drought-resistant forages, whether it's hay or something else that might be able to withstand these conditions, but also do well if it's a quote unquote normal season?
Yeah, I think we've kind of lost some of our way on research, and I know it's not the researchers' faults, but just through policy and programming done from government levels, I think some of the focus has changed. And as much as we try to, you know, bring attention to those kinds of things, it doesn't affect anyone until you're in the situation. So I think this is a really good time for us to start discussions about moving some of the forage research back into the public domain, and we'll need to look at some of those drought tolerant species. There is private research out that we can get our hands on those types of things, but unfortunately it's the same as the COVID pandemic. No one understands what kind of problems we have until we get into it. So we're going to need to look at all options and all alternative feeds. And I think that we can put a positive spin on this, consumers and society itself. You know, environment and climate change is a big issue right now. And it's, you know, more and more information is coming out that grasslands and forages are great climate change protectors and good for the environment. And I think that we're going to need to partner with not just government organizations, but a lot of the non-government organizations, conservatories and Ducks Unlimited, those kinds of things, and work on bringing these pastures back and get some kind of reward programs for doing proper environmental, building up your soil and making those carbon sinks work more effectively. And we've seen it in this drought that you could tell in the drier areas which fields and farms did a good job of incorporating fertilizers and organic matter into their fields, because those fields had the ability to hold up a little better than some that got neglected, or next year was the year that they were going to get some attention. So I think there's a lot of different avenues that our committees can look at, and there's a lot of solutions that we'll be able to come up with, and I'm sure we're going to have to look at global solutions as well. There's probably droughts that people made it through on the other side of the world that if we had that information, it would apply here. So we're going to have to look down every hallway and open every closet door and make sure we bring everything out and get the best programs and the most effective programs to make it through this, both short and long term.
For more information, lots more, about how this huge drought is affecting farmers across the country, have a look at what we're calling the Dry Times, which is a handy collection of Glacier Farm Media stories, as well as links to extension and government support services. Go to or search Glacier Farm Media, The Dry Times. But now, Diana looks at a problem arising in a different part of Ontario hit by a very different problem. Too much moisture. Here she is speaking with Albert Tenuta, a field crops pathologist with Ontario Agriculture.
Has the weather been a challenge in two parts? Has the weather been a challenge with allowing the tar spot to flourish and also being able to run your fungicide programs?
So yeah, both of those have been challenging. Well, if you're the tar spot fungus, it's been great, right? Because the weather, you know, we're hot and sticky right now, right? So this is ideal weather. So humidity and leaf wetness is better than rainfall in many cases because the leaf itself stays wet. You know, the more humidity, the more leaf wetness that surrounds the tar spot or the spores, the more likelihood they will be happy. The happier they are, the more infection that goes on, right? The other challenge has been in parts of the province, you know, this area here, we've had anywhere from 12 inches to 18, 19 inches of rain since July 2nd or so. And so that's made it difficult to get in as well. Now, having said that, so ground rigs have been delayed a bit, but we still have the window, right? So that's the one good thing is the work we've done in the past with northern corn leaf blight, as well as with the tar spot group, you know, the timings are the same. So whether it's a tassel to silking that we would see, say, for foliar relief diseases or for gibberella ear rot or dawn, we have the timing for that. The fungicides that work very effectively against tar spot, we also have those. And so we're ahead of the game. So we have the tools. It's just a matter of getting them on. And the past week and into this week, we've seen a lot of helicopters around. So, we may not be getting the ground rigs in as much, but we are also seeing that helicopters have been filling that void for now. And, you know, more and more rigs are going on, you know, this past late of the week and on the weekend here.
Now, I'm a producer. Mm-hmm. I don't have TarSpot. I don't think I have TarSpot. What should I be doing? What am I looking for if I've never seen it before? And because it does somewhat mimic other corn leaf issues, right?
Yeah.
So what am I looking for and what should I be doing if I find some? Like, what's the protocol?
Yeah. So right now, what growers should be doing is just scouting their fields. They should be scouting anyway, especially now that we're at that, you know, that tassel silking stage, you know, in the Southwest and slowly moving across the province. So it's a great time. Should be doing that anyway, regardless if we're looking for tar spot or anything. You should always be having an idea of what's going on, especially as you get those critical growth stages. And this is the big one for corn, right? As it's silking, as it's starting to pollinate, right? Just to see. And then with the weather this year, there's been a lot of variability in terms of silking and that in spots and that. So, you know, again, you want to look at uniformity of the crop and overall health of the crop as well. And so what you're looking for, you know, if you've got maple trees, et cetera, and you see that tar, you know, we see that tar spot that we normally will see on there, those big ugly looking globs of tar on those, very similar, different pathogen. And so one question we get asked a lot is, so are my maple trees going to infect my corn? Is my corn going to affect my maple trees? Different pathogens, the same symptoms, you know, same type of pathogen, etc., but they have different hosts. So no, there's no cross infection in that way. And that, so what you'll see first, and you know, if you've had it in the, you know, for those few growers that had it, you'll see it down low first. But the majority, with these storm fronts coming in right now, what will be is that it'll be from the ear leaf up. You'll see it higher up in the canopy. So again, depending on what you had, your history of the disease, if you had it before, you want to look down. If you haven't, it's going to be coming up because those spores are going to be landing. They're going to get intercepted by the leaves, the top leaves, right? And with this weather, that's where they're going to start to affect. That's what we saw last September and that. So get out there, scout, you know, if it's this early and you're seeing it, then, you know, and the weather conditions at this case, fungicide application is probably something to consider, especially because of the other benefits, the northern corn leaf blight. You know, if you're looking at, if you're on corn, or if you've got use of the grain for livestock, etc., then you're going to want to be looking at a product in there as well that has some ear rot or dawn suppression as well, right? So every field is different. You have to assess every field different. The good thing is it's not a disease to fear. We can manage it. It's just a matter of awareness and finding it.
Is Ontario the only province currently dealing with tar spot? They haven't seen any out west yet.
No. So Ontario, based on our proximity to where it is and the Great Lakes, the Great Lakes are wonderful. They also are great if you're a pathologist or a disease, right? Because it's hot, humid. That's the weather. And that. So this is still the area. I would suspect where we will start to see it is moving as Pennsylvania and New York State start coming on board. Then you're going to start seeing it along the lake, going into Lake Erie, St. Lawrence. So going up into the Ottawa Valley and then into Quebec. So that south part of Quebec, you know, south of Montreal in that area as well. That's more likely where it's going to start. Quebec probably more so than, say, Manitoba or other areas. Plus, there's more corn out that way.
That was Diana Martin speaking with Albert Tenuta of Ontario Ag. Well, it rained a bunch across Western Canada. What does that mean for prairie farmers? To get a sense of that, I've turned to two experts at Markets Farm. And now to explain to us what all this recent rainfall across many parts of the prairies has meant to farmers and will mean to farmers, I welcome Bruce Burnett, the Director of Weather and Markets Information for Markets Farm, to the show. Hello, Bruce.
Hi.
Well, Bruce, that's been a bunch of rain we got in certain areas. I'm in Manitoba, and I've been everywhere from southwestern Manitoba to eastern Manitoba, and there's been lots of rain. What is the general prairie situation now? What do people get, and what does that mean?
Well, this past week, we really received probably the best rains that we've had since the start of the growing season. Certainly in some areas, it has eclipsed the total precipitation that we've had throughout the June, July, and the early part of August even. So we really did receive a fair amount of rain, I would say, especially east of Regina. So from Regina east into Manitoba is where the heaviest amounts came. And we've generally received between 2 and 3 inches in those areas. Some areas a little bit more, some areas a little bit less. We've really added to the soil moisture levels with these rains, but as you can imagine, it's not nearly enough to get us back to even close to normal subsoil moisture. So although the rains are really nice right now, there are two problems with this. First of all, we haven't got the harvest done, so we would like to see things maybe stop here in the next little while, just so that we can finish off this year's harvest. And secondly, we're going to need a lot more rain, let's say, hopefully in September, later September, October, November, before the snow begins to fly.
And, you know, obviously for pastures, and it's cattle producers that have had the quickest extreme problems because they literally, in some areas, haven't had, you know, feed for their animals and have had to liquidate. But for crop growers, I mean, this is an awkward time, as you just pointed out, for a lot of rain to come. I mean, it's harvest. How does this affect that harvest situation for the various crops?
Well, again, in the southern, extreme southern areas of the prairie, so let's say south of the Trans-Canada Highway, we have good progress underway here. So we've got more than half the crop in most of those areas. Any kind of quality damage is probably going to be limited to those in the central and northern growing areas. These rains probably aren't enough by themselves to cause severe downgrading. Again, in cereal crops, you might drop a grade or so from these rains, but we're probably more concerned about persistence of these rains, let's say, in through September, where we would see larger delays and even more quality degradation of the crops.
And looking forward to that fall time when the crop is off and we need to, you know, see hopefully those very parched subsoils recharged. How much of a deficit do we have? How far are we behind where farmers would like to be come next spring?
Again, we have significant deficits that we've built up in some areas over the last 18 months. So those are, you know, range from 4 to 8 inches of deficit in the driest areas from what we would have normally received over that 18-month time frame. So that's a significantly tall order. But in order to replenish the soils, we probably need to see 3 or 4 months here of above normal precipitation just to put us in a position where we have, instead of no subsoil moisture, enough subsoil moisture that we can make a difference for the 2022 crop.
Well, I'm sure we'll keep watching it, and I thank you very much, Bruce, for joining us on the show today.
Thanks very much.
That's Bruce Burnett, the Director of Weather and Markets Information for Markets Farm. And this is Between the Rows. And now I turn to one of Bruce's colleagues at Markets Farm, Glenn Halleck, for a bit of a take on what this will mean for the markets, looking at all this rain and the crop prospects. Hello, Glenn, and welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Ed.
So what's your take on what this has meant so far to the markets and what it means to the outlook, considering this is lots of rain but coming at a funny time? How's the market looking at that?
Well, the rain hasn't had that much effect on canola prices. That's simply because, you know, we had such a long stretch of hot, dry weather. The crop matured really fast. So this rain, for the most part, won't affect things other than it might slow down harvest for a few days. Here we are, August 24th, and canola jumped up about $22 per ton today.
So in terms of all the fireworks of this summer, this has not turned out to be a big deal.
Maybe if we get more rain later on, you know, build up that subsoil moisture level. But in terms of canola, other than, you know, giving guys a break off the combine for a few days, I don't think it's really done anything.
And in terms of the long term, is that going to be the question of does this, I guess, affect more 2022 prices than 2021?
Yeah. Well, we're looking at a shortage of canola. You know, last year I think we were about 18.7 million tons came off the prairie fields. Everybody was hoping for a little bit over 20 million tons. Now, you talk to traders and analysts, they're saying, well, maybe it's going to be 15, might be up to 17. Some guys are saying it could be as low as 12. And we really won't know anything, you know, get a good handle until August 30th when StatsCan comes out with its production report.
And what is the biggest factor, you know, in the overall structure of canola prices today? Is that the soy oil values? Is that what canola still follows?
Yeah, canola, you know, most of the time is the follower. The leader is the Chicago soy complex, especially soy oil. If soy oil goes up, you know, that day or the day after, canola will rise. And the other way around when soy oil drops down.
And what are you going to be watching most closely as we move forward here for the next few weeks?
Oh, I think we got to see that production number StatsCan is going to give us on August 30th. How far off are we going to be away from that 20 million tons? You know, the ending stocks for 2020-21 were supposed to be around 700,000 tons. Now we got production, you know, 3 to 5 million tons less, maybe even 7 million tons less. You know, there's not enough Canadian canola to go around right now, you know, all because of this drought. So production numbers and ending stocks are those to watch.
Well, thanks very much, Glenn, for catching up to this situation for us, and thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks so much, Ed.
Glenn Halleck is a reporter with Glacier Markets Farm. This is Between the Rows. That's all for this week's edition of Between the Rows. Before I leave you, I'll mention two things once again. We're on YouTube. Search Between the Rows podcast. And we have a great source of drought stories and resources online at Glacier Farm Media, The Dry Times. And with that, I'll bid you farewell. I'm Ed White, and it was my pleasure being your host this week.
Part of being a farmer is being an accountant and a mechanic and a chemist. You have lots on the go. So FarmLink makes your grain marketing go further. We help you reach your financial goals with calculated sales decisions. No bias, just solutions and results. Plus, with our new app GrainFox, we bring every opportunity right to your fingertips. Literally. Start seeing the returns that'll get your family ahead. You've earned it. FarmLink. Your work is worth more. Get started at farmlinksolutions.ca.